Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Deborah Becker. Well, before we get to our regular week in review, where we go through some of the other news of the week, I want to get our panelists' reactions to what Senator Elizabeth Warren just said right before the break. Arlene Isaacson is with me in the studio. She's political consultant and co-chair of the Massachusetts Gay and Lesbian Political Caucus. Thanks for being with us.
Oh, nice to be here.
Also with us, Richard Tessay, former Republican leader of the Massachusetts State Senate. Hi there.
Happy to be here.
So, Elizabeth Warren, who was just on the air with us, talking about her new book. I wonder, Arlene, your thoughts about some of the things she said about her book and her priorities.
Well, I think she actually captured precisely the dynamic that we're struggling with in this country right now, which is the change in public policy since approximately 1980-ish in how we focus our laws and our regulations, whether they're oriented towards helping working class and middle class folks to provide them more opportunities, or whether it's reoriented just a little bit at the beginning. I think, you know, if you know how math and geometry works, you know that a tiny change in the angle of something at first is just a small change in the angle, but as it grows out over time, it gets larger and larger and larger. And I think that's what happened. Changes were made in the 80s that seemed perhaps small at the time, but the ramifications have been hugely negative for the middle class in this country, and she really put her finger right on it.
Mm. And Richard?
There's a lot going on economically in the country, but I kind of find her premise that the middle class has been hammered to be a real indictment of the last 8 years. I mean, you know, President Obama's been in, and you're in the 8 years of Bill Clinton, you know, if you're talking about what's happened since 1980. And the other thing I'd just say is, you know, she has a lot of, when you listen to her, a lot of great rhetoric, but at the end of the day, I think there are a lot of people in the state who want to see results, and she really does, you know, one of the reasons I think she's been having so much trouble in recent polling, I know WBUR did a poll, and there have been a couple of other public polls released that show that she's not in the greatest position for re-election, is because I think people want to see our elected officials in Washington work together. And she had talked a little bit about working together during the interview, but there really aren't any examples where she's been able to cross the party lines to get anything done. And, you know, Massachusetts, I think, is getting hurt right now.
Well, you know, I have to say, though, it's a bit unfair to use the metric of have you gotten anything done since the Republicans have controlled Congress and the Senate. So were the other party in control, there's a lot she could have gotten done. But right now, she's fighting right now. You know the expression, who's watching the watchdogs? Well, Congress should be our watchdog. Mm. But who's watching them? I believe that she's doing a fabulous job watching them and calling them out when they do things which are disadvantageous for the middle class.
But, you know, there are a lot of bread and butter issues here in Massachusetts that it doesn't matter if you're a Democrat or Republican, you should be tending to. And I think that, you know, this is a Democratic state, but I do think that there's a feeling that she's more interested in, you know, throwing rocks and, you know, fighting it out down in D.C.
What's an example of one of those issues? You feel like she's not sort
you know,
of
there was a bill up not too long ago that had to do with funding for medical research that President Obama had to call Governor Baker to, you know, to try to win support, you know, get some support ginned up in Massachusetts because Elizabeth Warren was erring against President Obama on that. And we, you know, we're obviously a state that does pretty well research-wise, from the federal government, that it would have been great to have our senator front and center supporting the bill.
Well, you know, on the other hand, though, our economy, this state in particular, is so founded in our higher ed institutions, and she understands clearly more than many in Congress the importance of dealing with student loan debt and reducing the amount that kids have to pay for those student loans and the ramifications on their lives. That is a quintessential bipartisan, should be a bipartisan issue.
I think we have to agree that it's really tough for anybody to do anything. There's no bipartisan atmosphere in general now, right?
True.
No, it's difficult. It's difficult there, but, you know, she's become a great national figure. Maybe she'll run for president. Maybe that's what the book tour is all about. But I do think at the end of the day, you know, there are a lot of people who want to see her in the state doing things for Massachusetts. And you know, Ted Kennedy was great, you know, in that he was a liberal icon and did, you know, a lot of, had a national profile. But I got to tell you, he was great doing all the bread and butter issues here from Massachusetts, and we don't really have a senator right now who is doing that in the same tradition that, that he did. And I think that's the point, and I think that's what's hurting her in Massachusetts.
Invoking
some of these
polls. Ted Kennedy. Just pointing that out.
I actually think she does a lot more of that than she's given credit for, and I actually think that there's a little bit of a judgment that may be slightly gender-based, not from you, Richard, but from some in terms of how she works versus Kennedy.
Okay, let's move on to the news of the week, first of all, because we had a very busy news week. First of all, we had the Aaron Hernandez story, his apparent suicide, former New England Patriots player Aaron Hernandez, we should say, his apparent suicide in prison early Wednesday. And, you know, here's Governor Baker promising a complete investigation from the State Department of Correction. Let's listen.
Look, anytime anybody kills himself in a prison, something clearly went wrong, although as one of the prison advocates said, that can be a tough issue to manage sometimes. But obviously the investigation that DOC will do will hopefully give us some guidance on steps we could take going forward.
Now, we should say that what we know at this point also is that state law in Massachusetts allows Hernandez's legal records to be wiped clear because he was still appealing his murder conviction. The lawyer for the family of Odin Lloyd, that's the man Hernandez was convicted of killing, spoke with reporters today, and they're calling on the Patriots to pay some $6 million to Hernandez's estate. They say that money should be made available to their family. Here's Ursula Ward. She is Odin Lloyd's mother.
It's not even about Odin Lloyd. It's about the person that committed the crime for Odin Lloyd. If it wasn't for that, you guys wouldn't be here to ask me questions about Odin Lloyd. So today I'm speaking up for Odin Lloyd and for the families out there that is fighting for justice.
So Richard, I'm wondering, what do you think this high-profile prison suicide of Aaron Hernandez, how does that affect the image of Massachusetts?
I think the whole situation has been stunning, watching it, and who would have thought that that it would have ended, you know, that he would have committed suicide the day that the Patriots are literally celebrating at the White House. But, you know, I think, you know, there are 10,000 prisoners under the control of the Department of Corrections. Obviously, they can't watch every prisoner 24 hours a day. I mean, some, you know, if you're intent on taking your own life, it's pretty hard, I think, to stop that from happening. Obviously, the governor's right. There needs to be an investigation to make sure that all the policy and procedures, were adhered to. But again, if somebody's intent on doing that, and maybe he did it for the financial benefit,
Right, because the slate would be wiped clean, and so then that money might be available to
his
estate.
Available, and from what I understand, he also had the opportunity to get, he qualified for a pension from the NFL, maybe that would, come into play. So, you know, just a bad situation all the way around.
But, you know, there are a lot of folks who are saying, questioning whether he could commit suicide under those circumstances and why he would have done it just days after he was acquitted of a double murder, because he was also charged with the double murder in Boston, and he was acquitted on Friday, and on Wednesday morning he's found dead in his cell. And some folks, say that the Department of Correction is not being transparent enough. We have a clip here from George Leontire. He's a lawyer for Hernandez's family. He was in court this afternoon criticizing the Department of Corrections for not being transparent enough. Let's listen.
They should have talked to Mr. Leontire and the family the night he died, or the morning he died, and they should have told them about suicide notes before they had to read it in the newspaper.
So because apparently now we found out that the Worcester County District Attorney is saying there were 3 suicide notes in his cell, and initially they said there was no suicide note. So I'm wondering, Arlene, does this raise big questions, do you think, about our Department of Correction and about how an investigation like this is handled?
It's a fair question, but I tend to look at this from a little bit more of a 30,000-foot level. First, it's a tragedy in so many ways for so many people involved, for the Odin Lloyd's family, for Aaron's family. But it's kind of sad that the issue of how people live in prison are treated and investigated and why that there'd be suicides becomes an issue only when it's a famous person involved, when unfortunately it happens at other times and in other ways, particularly for people who have been in solitary confinement, which I realize he was not. I also, though, look at it from the good point of view that it's wonderful that the family decided to donate his brain, crass as that may sound, to to have CTE investigated to see if he suffered from chronic traumatic, I'm going to struggle with this, encephalopathy.
Right.
Thank you, encephalopathy, which, as some people know, is a brain disease that comes from the trauma that so many football players undergo with the brain concussions. So, and CTE apparently can cause depression, aggression, suicidality. So it'll be important to look at that. But the details of some of this, I think, go beyond that. They go to how all prisoners are treated.
Mm-hmm. They found the suicide notes after he had committed suicide. And if he had mentioned that or they had any indication, they would have obviously.
But their first statement said no note.
No, I understand. Mm-hmm. I understand that. But, you know, I mean, he wasn't being watched for being at risk. I mean, he had just, like, he had just won a big trial.
Mm-hmm.
I think a lot of people would have thought that this would have been, you know, wouldn't have been the time that he would have been doing. So, you know, there was a lot of general shock.
I just want to also bring up another criminal justice related story, and that was the almost end of a chapter in the state drug lab scandal. We found out this week that some 21,000 criminal cases are going to be dismissed involving former state chemist Annie Ducon. She went to prison for 3 years for falsifying drug tests. And, you know, it's been a long, five-year-long legal fight over what to do about this bad behavior in a state lab by Annie Ducon. And we just, you know, after the SJC ruled in January that prosecutors had to identify cases, they identified 24,000. The court said, tell us which ones you're going to dismiss. Just this week, we got the certification that 21,000 cases will be dismissed, believed to be the largest in U.S. history. What do you think is the conclusion of this story, Arlene?
It's a very interesting and sorrowful tale. I know that the ACLU, public defenders, a lot of pro bono law firms worked on this for a long time trying to get through this mess. And it's a pity that some of the district attorneys fought so long and so hard and wasted, candidly, so much taxpayer money doing so when these cases could have been dealt with several years ago. The biggest problem, in my opinion, is that it's not necessarily about Annie Ducon, and there's also a similar case out in Western Mass where another problem drug lab. But it's really very much a result of the failed war on drugs where you criminalize drug behavior. And so a lot of the people who were put in jail were there for mere possession, sort of low-level crimes. Most of those are low-income or poor black and brown people whose lives were hurt irreparably, not simply because they spent time in jail, but because after coming out, they'd have a hard time getting employment, have a hard time getting housing. So it speaks to the fact that we really need to revisit how we're handling the drug war and if we shouldn't be slotting people more towards treatment than towards prison.
And what's your take on it?
I agree with what we just said.
Yeah.
I think what I find stunning about this is that she's out on parole. She had a three-year sentence, and the damage and the consequences of her actions are so widespread. I mean, you have people who are in jail who were falsely convicted based on evidence that she tainted, and then you have thousands of people who are guilty who were released or are going to have their records expunged. That's also repercussions from that. So, I mean, the fact that she, not only her, but her supervisors, you know, seemed to all get off scot-free, managers at the company that she was at the office, the drug lab she was at. It's just, I just find it rather surprising.
I want to finally move to our hubbubs. Those are the brief stories that may not have made it above the fold but caught our attention, and we have very limited time left, so I'm going to have to ask you to be very concise. Arlene, what's your hubbub for the week?
Mine is for hub lovers and about Art Week this week, coming along soon. The Old South Meeting House, which is in downtown Boston at Downtown Crossing, sponsors a lot of wonderful programs and tours in and around the city. And in 2 weeks, they're holding their annual quiz show on Boston history. So Sue Wilson, who, as many know, is an acclaimed photographer and author and a Boston historian, runs each year this quiz show on various aspects of Boston's long and interesting history. So on May 3, the Old South Meeting House is going to have a quiz show that will focus on the vibrant newcomers from around the world who shaped our neighborhoods. It's always a fun, interesting, educational night, and I encourage people to go.
All right, Richard.
And just a quick shout out to Sydney Chafee, who was the she's a ninth grade humanities instructor.
Yeah, we had her on the air yesterday. Yeah. Teacher, national teacher of the year.
Mm-hmm. Very impressive. The first time in 65 years a Massachusetts teacher has been honored. And she's a charter school teacher. The first time that's happened as well.
All right.
So pretty good.
Okay, so I'm going to try to do this really fast. What's a Southie? Anybody know? What's a Southie? That's right. Well, the New York Times, it is a neighborhood, but the New York Times got some flack this week because they called Barbara Lynch a Southie. And people said, no, a person is not a Southie. A neighborhood is a Southie. The Times used the term not once, but twice in a story. Now, I don't want to make fun of other journalists or anything. It's more making fun of how provincial we can be here. The Boston Globe then asked Barbara Lynch, Chef Barbara Lynch, and she said she never claimed to be a Southie, but if people from Southie started calling themselves that, she would be proud to be one. So there we go. What is a Southie? Anyway, Arlene Isaacson, political consultant and co-chair of the Massachusetts Gay and Lesbian Political Caucus. Thanks so much for being with
us. Thank you.
Also, Richard Tessay, former Republican leader of the Massachusetts State Senate. Thanks
to you.
Nice to see you. Nice to see you. Stay with us. There's more ahead. I'm Deborah Becker, and this is Radio Boston.